So I've been made aware of by a few folks during session that they know nothing about Lin Chi. So before getting into today's discourse, I'll give you a short history. Although his influence on Chan and Zen is great, one of the two major sects are named for him, he shows up in our formal koan study rarely. But fortunately, there is a whole book of koan called the Rinzai Roku, translated by Burton Watson, titled The Zen Teachings of Master Lin Chi, that fill out the style and flavor of his particular Zen. Lin Chi is commonly known in the West for his gritty roughness, for his almost redneck passion for pushing, shouting, wrestling, and slapping. But fortunately, this is only a small part of his teaching repertoire. He was quite eloquent and warm-hearted in his discourses, and many of his lectures are filled with a clear and simple, a direct and uncomplicated way of expression. Sometimes he spoke in dense metaphor and seeming paradox, exclaiming or presenting the pure fact of our non-dual nature. At other times he spoke of his hard years of study and training as a young monk. And we can imply from some of his talks of the great doubts that he had when he was a student. He talked quite succinctly at times and simply of what did and did not work for him as a student. In other talks, he described the attributes of a good teacher and encouraged his students to identify with a few useful tricks, the phonies and fox spirits posing as Zen masters. He laid out goals for his students and constantly beseeched them to be unhesitant in their struggles and to not bow to their own doubts, but to realize the trials and tribulations as the Tathagata herself. He knew they, his students, would have doubts at points in their journey, and that they would suffer and have pain. But he hoped for them. He hoped they could understand that the Buddhas and patriarchs are none other than you, the people sitting in front of me listening to this talk. And he hoped that they knew that this lone brightness before my eyes now, you listening, you are unimpeded and in this very moment completely free. His deep understanding called forth an unrelenting optimism. And it was the source of his great confidence in you and in me to wake up during this session, to wake up today, to wake up right now. So in this Burton Watson book, there are four sections with 69 lectures and dialogues. The first two sections involve his lectures, and the last two sections regard primarily his activities and dialogues, and the dialogues of some of his students and Sangha members. Recently, Thich Nhat Hanh translated the first two sections of this book and has written commentaries for these 23 lectures. So Lingxi was born in around the year 811 of our common era in the far western corner of present-day Shantung Province, the area south of the Yellow River. And he died in around 866 in an area north of that same river in present-day Hopei. So I'd like to read you a section today from our discourse from the second section of the book. And I'll only read you, as I've been doing before, a few of the paragraphs because they're just a little bit too long for a session talk. So I'll start a little ways down. He says, "Followers of the way, the outstanding teachers from times past have all had ways of drawing people out. What I myself want to impress on you is that you mustn't be led astray by others. If you want to use this thing, then use it and have no doubts or hesitations. When students today fail to make progress, where's the fault? The fault lies in the fact that they don't have faith in themselves. If you don't have faith in yourself, then you'll be forever in a hurry, trying to keep up with everything around you. You'll be twisted and turned by whatever environment you're in, and you can never move freely. But if you can just stop this mind that goes rushing around moment by moment looking for something, then you'll be no different from the patriarchs and the Buddhas. Do you want to get to know the patriarchs and Buddhas? They're none other than you, the people standing in front of me listening to this lecture on the Dharma." And then he goes on to a paragraph that I really like. He says, "Fellow believers, there is no safety in the threefold world. It is like a burning house. This is no place for you to linger for long. The deadly demon of impermanence will be on you in an instant, regardless of whether you're rich or poor, old or young. Followers of the way, this thing called mind has no fixed form. It penetrates all the 10 directions. In the eye, we call it sight. In the ear, we call it hearing. In the nose, it detects odors. In the mouth, it speaks discourse. In the hand, it grasps. In the feet, it runs along. Basically, it is a single bright essence, but it divides itself into these six functions. And because this single mind has no fixed form, it is everywhere in a state of emancipation. Why do I tell you this? Because you followers of the way seem to be incapable of stopping this mind that goes rushing around everywhere looking for something. So you get caught up in those idle devices of the men of old. Fellow believers, just act ordinary. Don't affect some special manner. There's a bunch of old ball-headed fellows who can't tell good from bad, but who spy gods here, spy devils there, point to the east, gesture to the west, declare they love clear weather, or they love it when it rains. They'll have a lot to answer for one day when they stand before old Yama and have to swallow a ball of red hot iron." Actually, I didn't even mean to read that part, but so be it. "So men and women of good family let themselves be taken in by this bunch of wild foxes and end up completely bewitched." Okay, so this is a relatively straightforward Lingxi. There aren't dense metaphors and hidden meanings. He is saying exactly what you think he is saying. As I said the other day with this word faith, that's the word that Watson uses, and Thich Nhat Hanh translates the Chinese as confidence. But in our English dictionary, the root of both of these words, faith and confidence, is trust. Have trust in yourself. Have trust in your surroundings, which are yourself. Trust your conditions, each condition, the splashing waves, the jet roar, the red-winged blackbird call. Trust your fear, your sorrow or worry. Trust your happiness and joy. Each is the brilliant light of the Tathagata. Each is your own brilliant light. You can be used by your conditions. You can be used by your surroundings, or you can use them. If you hear the waves and are reminded of your childhood vacation place, and then you're reminded of your favorite bathing suit and your favorite ducky, and on, you are being used. You are no longer the host. You are no longer at home. You have left your body. You've left this body of practice and are now no better than ghosts clinging to whatever bush or tree the wind blew you into. You can, however, use your conditions. Let the wind blow away all your idle chatter and sit. Sit right in the middle of the howling. Sit right in the middle of the gentle rattling of the windows. Let the waves lap up onto your zabutong. Let them lap up onto your zafu. Let them lap onto you, washing away any sense of separateness, of any special identity. Let the waves wet you all the way through. And similarly with feelings, you can get on the train with each of your feelings far, far, far into the distant past, far into your imagination, touching on things that never even happened, becoming self-absorbed and self-pitying. Or you can use those feelings by sitting right in the middle of them, by doing sad mu, by doing lonely mu, by doing a tear-filled mu, sitting right there, concentrated on the seat of Bodhi, on the Buddha's seat, on your seat. So this is using your conditions rather than being used by your conditions. And he says, have confidence. And I say, there is no difference between you and Shakyamuni Buddha. She, no different than you, you people standing in front of me listening to this lecture. Although actually you're sitting in front of me. Is there any moment when the six miraculous beings, those beings of the eye, ears, nose, tongue, body, mind, is there any moment when the six miraculous beams of light do not shine out? Trust. Have confidence. Have confidence, and then after page number four, you will be able to find page number five. It must be here. Yes. Have confidence that you can be a Buddha. Have confidence that you are a Buddha. And then, as I just read a little bit ago, Lin Chi says next in one of my favorite passages, "Fellows, there is no safety in the threefold world. It is like a burning house. This is no place for you to linger for long. The deadly demon of impermanence will be on you in an instant, regardless of whether you're rich or poor, regardless of whether you're old or young, regardless of whether you do zazen or not. That deadly demon of impermanence will come for you." So my partner Eileen and I, and a couple of friends at home, have been reading Dante's Commedia. And we have, with the pilgrim, just come to paradise. However, before entering paradise, Dante's guide Virgil, who has been with him through the inferno and then up the paths of the seven-story mountain, finds that he can't go any further with Dante. So in one scene, as Dante is asking questions about paradise, Virgil disappears and Beatrice takes his place. Dante continues on unmindfully with his questions. And the first thing she does, though she hasn't seen him for decades and decades and decades, is she shushes him. And then she berates him. She chastises him for his behavior on earth. She says, and I am paraphrasing, "You say you loved me on earth. You loved my youth and my beauty. You loved my purity. You loved my eyes. But then I died, and in a sense, I showed you the true beauty, the true purity. I showed you the reality of impermanence. I, my death, pointed to a deeper truth than youth and folly. But you refused to let this truth, the truth of life and death, the truth of impermanence in, and you went chasing after other, less real and true things. You chased after political power. You chased after fame and wealth. And you chased after land and ladies. And you forgot me. You forgot or ignored the full reality of me. And you forgot what my death pointed to." Beatrice goes on like this in beautiful poetic form, and finally Dante, weeping with bowed head, admits his distraction and lack of true desire. And with this admission, he is able to pass into paradise. Beatrice and Lin Chi are encouraging us to not chase around looking for quick fixes, to not chase around looking for temporary relief of our anxiety and worries. They're both saying, stop. Stop right now. Stop right now in the middle of the crashing waves. Stop in the middle of the blowing wind. Stop in the middle of the rattling windows. Stop. open to this mode. Turn about and bear witness to this self nature. Come back to this breath. To this breath right now. Touch this place, right here. Touching this place, right here, now, will allow you in this moment, but then also into the future, to not get rid of, but to tolerate your own uncomfortableness. Your own sense of unsatisfactoriness. Cultivate this place, and it can become a refuge. A refuge that will walk with you when you walk. It will sit with you when you sit. And it can aid you any time that you need aid. Trust it. Trust this place and this body. This body of practice here. And with this way of practicing, with this way of living, you'll find it is unnecessary to run about chasing after things for relief and satisfaction. Because you will be carrying the jewel of the dragon, your jewel, wherever you may go. You will no longer have to seek without or really even within. Because that radiance of the jewel will be coming from your eyes. And the radiance of the jewel will be coming from your lips. The radiance will be you. And Lin Chi ends this lecture saying, just act ordinary. You don't have to be the perfect Zen student. By the fourth day of session, you already know that, or you would have left with the others yesterday. You don't have to be the best cook. You don't have to be the most musically able. You just have to be yourself all the way to the bottom. Already, right now, you are the one with no eyes, already no ears, already no nose, tongue, body, mind. Now, already, you just have to relax and realize your seeking mind is the one you are seeking. And it isn't outside that you'll find it. And as I just said, it really isn't even inside. It is, though, in relaxing and letting go to thy will, not mine. You are already the one with no form, with no characteristics, with no age, height, or gender. This isn't something we create by doing Zazen. And it isn't something we find. It is simply what we realize. We realize I am thus from the very beginning and all the way to the very end. I'm just going to read you a really short piece that I scribbled just as I was walking out the door, so it might not fit and it might not work. But so it's a little like this. It's like looking for horses in the evening. The dark has already fallen. And they are standing, though unseen, at the far end of a field backed by tall hemlocks. You look, but it's just dark against dark, and there are no horses and no hemlocks. They are quiet and still, and there isn't even the slightest breeze or whisper. And then the moon, using a well-worn path, climbs over the back side of the mountains. And immediately, on that moon's rising, the horses are alighted. They glow in a soft, hollow, golden light. And we see them. And we see them maybe for the first time. And we're amazed, touched by their majesty and color, by their bearing and steadiness. And our Zazen is just like that. They were there from the very beginning. They were always standing there up against the hemlocks. There is nothing that you have to create or make or even find. Just let your own natural light, your own natural illumination, light them up. And right before your eyes, the majesty and color, the bearing and steadiness, the wind, the airplanes and waves, just as they are, just as you are. Come back again and again and again, and one day that moon will walk that well-worn path and throw the light that is already shining from your eyes, shining from your mouth, already shining from your heart. Okay, thank you.